podcast is part of the Sports Social Podcast Network.
The 1865 Match Report.
Hello and welcome to the 1865 Match Report, and we are reporting upon an eventful night at Bramall Lane. It was a match which finished 1-1, so honours even, the spoils shared and all of that. And predictably, Billy Sharp was the man who scored for Sheffield United. And the headlines were that it was a 95th minute equaliser by Ryan Yates that earned Forest the point. Now, there's a whole lot more to it. There's a lot to talk about with this match, so we'll go through it as best we can. Let's start off with the team news. So Forest obviously were forced into a change as Max Lowe was ineligible to play against his parent club. And so Ryan Yates came in, and what that meant is we had Horvath in goal, Worrell, Cook and McKenna across the back, Colback and Spence at wing-back, and then Garner and Yates holding midfield with Zinchenko playing behind Keenan Davis and Brennan Johnson. And I'm joined by Baz to discuss some of the match. Now, before we go into some of the details, Baz, just your gut instinct. Was this a point gained, 2 points dropped, or actually a bit of both?
For most of the game, I would say, yeah, 2 points dropped. On another day, that would have been a comfortable win for Forest. And I have a few issues with some of the things we were doing during the game because of that. It would be nice. Definitely 2 points dropped from my point of view from the way we played. Having said that, before the game, yeah, I'd probably have been happy with a point at Sheffield United. But yeah, with the playoffs just in our grasp and the way we played, yeah, 2 points dropped.
And what was interesting as well is that Michelle Owen on Sky Sports was making the point that goal, 30 seconds before the final whistle, deep into stoppage time, made the difference between Forest being 5 points outside the playoffs and being 2 points outside the playoff zone with basically everything to play for still. It's so tight, isn't it? So that's the upshot of the match. I mean, Forest made a blistering start. Their intent was very clear right in the first minute because it was less than 60 seconds on the clock when Brennan Johnson forced a save from Wes Fodringham in the Sheffield United goal. It was a deflected effort, but this came after a wave of yellow pressure going forward. And then from the resulting corner, Keenan Davis had a header which was inches over, and Sheffield United, who have got an absolutely outstanding record since Paul Heckingbottom has took over as manager, they've not conceded for 7 matches at home, which is an incredible record. And Forest were asking all the questions. And I think it says a lot that their defence didn't look that hot, and Fodringham was by far the busier keeper in the first period. So let's talk about some of those details. And so we've already mentioned that initial chance by Johnson and then Davis. Now, the next moment which is on everyone's mind was midway through the first half. Sheffield United had a young lad making his full debut at right wing back, a guy called Femi Siriki. And I think Femi Siriki got away with one because it's very clear, one of the advantages of wearing a fluorescent shirt is it's very clear when someone's pulling that shirt off your back. And Keenan Davis, I mean, really, Siriki should have been buying him dinner first, shouldn't he?
Yeah, well, you say it's very clear, but again, on the TV, the replay showed the referee looked like he had a pretty clear line of sight as well. And he didn't see it, but even though there was at least like 6 inches of shirt being pulled off Davis's back. To be fair, even if Davis had got to the ball, you don't know what he'd have done with it, but you still can't pull him down like that.
Well, so this comes back to that whole issue of consistency that we've talked about so many times. I don't particularly want to make this a pod centred on the referee. But against Luton at home, Jack Colback had a penalty given against him for shirt pulling in the area, which, a man kind of went down in a fairly similar way to what happened to Davis. And you know what? I had no problem with it. I said it in our match report on that night. No problem with the referee giving a penalty, as long as referees are told that's a penalty and give those decisions consistently. We've seen it happen in World Cups and in the Euros, and yet in league games, it's so inconsistent. You never know what you're going to get in those ones. And that's frustrating, isn't it?
Yeah, and even then, The two other things that I find annoying about penalties is, one, between two different games, yeah, two different referees might see it differently, but I'd like at least that one referee during the 90 minutes to be consistent in those decisions, which is something that we've not had this season. And then the other thing is, when it comes to a penalty shout as well, there's so much weight on it that if you have one refused or you get win one, it's almost like it cancels out all your chances for a penalty shout for the rest of the game. And it's really, if getting it wrong actually matters even more because of
that. So let's riff on that then, because it was not that long afterwards that Forrest did get awarded a penalty. And what the Blades fans seem to be saying on social media is that, well, actually, the one on Davis was probably more of a penalty, and the referee almost gave this one to even it out. Now, on Sky, I know a lot of Forest fans have beef with Don Goodman, and I have to say, Goodman was getting on my nerves on this one, because he kept just trying to argue that it was a soft decision. But as far as I'm concerned, Jedmon Spence, he made a run into the area. He got the wrong side of his fullback, as far as the defender's concerned. And the defender stuck his leg in and it made clear contact with Jedmon's right leg.
And so,
as far as I'm concerned, that's
a penalty. A shove on his back. So the leg contact put him off balance and then he shoved over. So I think it was softer than the Davis penalty, but I think it was definitely a penalty.
Yeah, okay. And I think I would agree with that. I say it's softer, but it doesn't stop it from being a penalty.
Yeah.
And so we had a clear chance to score a goal. And I don't know about you, but it's pretty obvious to me that what Brennan was going to do. And unfortunately, it was really, really obvious to Wes Fodringham as well.
Yeah. And even if you're going to hit it straight down the middle, you've got to give proper welly it or give it a chip. And he did on either of them. He pretty much hit it straight at Fotheringham's arms. So,
okay. Well, he took, the issue here is that he took exactly the same penalty that he took at Blackburn. If you're going to have a particular style of penalty, you've got to make sure it's going to work. And this was a criticism I've had of Lewis Grabban for 2 years until this season, which is he always takes the same penalty and therefore it's really easy for a keeper to anticipate. This one, Fodringham, all he had to do was say, okay, last time Brennan Johnson took a penalty, he feathered it up the middle at head height. So if I stay on my feet, I've got a pretty good chance of saving it. And then Joby McAnuff in the Sky Sports studio also made a really good point, which is that it was so obvious. If you're going to do it, you've got to disguise it. You've got to keep the keeper guessing. And Brennan, he looked up the middle. His body shape was all, I'm going to feather it up the middle. And you've got to give something more there. And interestingly, Steve Cooper, he didn't attempt to defend Brennan, did he? All he did was focus upon Brennan's going to learn from this.
Yeah, definitely. And I mean, you'd expect that from Cooper, given the type of manager he is and how he looks after his young players. I was surprised when it was Johnson standing up to take it in the first place, though, to be honest. I thought Davis might want it.
Well, apparently he is the designated penalty taker now that Grabban's out and Taylor's gone. So, and he took penalties for Lincoln last season and he scored them. So not that many, but he took some. So I could understand that. And let's be honest, it's Brennan who's the man who's taking the bulk of the goal scoring burden, as we've discussed in previous weeks. So if we think about that, that was the obvious clear chance. But Forrest still looked threatening. There weren't so many quite so clear-cut chances, but we had moments where the obvious one, I think, was when Zinchenko tried to create a few openings. He had one of those matches where he was trying to break through between the defenders and he ended up keeping on running into them, didn't he?
Yeah. Yeah, it's kind of almost, not quite, but almost quite like out-muscled. There was a shot from Cook as well, I think, from a corner in the first half. Which forced a good save off Fotheringham. But yeah, it was one of those, and I'm sure we'll come back to this. I thought we, even though we were making chances, we looked a bit soft-edged. And when we had the ball, we didn't really string passes together either. We didn't look, it was like the chances were falling to us rather than us making the chances, if that makes any sense.
Okay, yeah. But as you said, we'll come back to this a little bit later. So it was 0-0 at half time. And it's fair to say as well that Forest kept playing in that same vein. For all the criticism that Don Goodman takes from Forest fans, he was absolutely singing the Reds' praises, because Forest just, you would not have known that Sheffield United were one of the form teams in the division, especially with such a strong home record. And in my mind, Forest,
you would not have known that Sheffield United were the home team.
Well, yeah, quite. And to my mind, you know, it was, and we were discussing this in our WhatsApp group, all that was missing was the goal, which was the really frustrating thing.
You're listening to 1865, the Nottingham Forest podcast.
We'll skip forward a little bit because there were other moments. Again, Zinchenogle had a chance. It was a nice move, actually. A really good 1-2 with Keenan Davis. And Zinchenogle found himself in the left-hand channel. He should have done the classic corridor of uncertainty ball where Brennan Johnson was running in, but he tried to welly it with his left foot and he hit the side netting. And he didn't even make the keeper work. And that's disappointing. Yeah. There are a couple of runs by Davis where he was loving it, wasn't he? He really was.
There was that one where he sort of picked up the ball and then ran into one of their defenders and then picked it up again after pushing the defender out of the way and managed to get into the box. He was on fire, but without
it was
a goal.
Very reminiscent of the goal he set up for Jimmy Garner at Blackburn, wasn't it? Where he was just thundering through him and still retaining the ball even when he went down. He was the first one up and he still had the ball at his feet. So there's some real fire in the bellies. And of course, in time and a tradition, you've got to capitalise when you're on top, haven't you? Because there were a couple of things that were notable. And the first one was actually from Sheffield United, which was they made substitutions. And let's be honest, Paul Heckingbottom, he'll have been watching that and after an hour going, we've got to change something because we're in trouble here. And he made substitutions. And one of the substitutions was for Daniel Jeberson, a centre forward, to come on in place of Ollie Norwood, who is their anchorman midfielder. And the other one saw little Benny Osborne come on for Siriki on the right flank. So it meant that Sheffield United had a very lopsided back five, because I think four out of the five are left footers and John Egan was playing in the middle. So Benny Osborne was playing right wing back, which is something of all the positions he played for Forest. I don't even think that was one of them. But it made a difference, didn't it? And added a real sense of impetus towards what the Blades were doing. And it took a little while for it to pay off, but it certainly did pay off. And as we said, you know, you could have predicted that it would have been that man who would have scored the goal. And you were telling me before we started recording that basically the goal was your fault, wasn't it?
Yes, I have to hold my hands up and say it's entirely my fault, because I was just telling the people I was with that Billy Sharp, Sir William Sharp, is one of the greatest strikers there's ever been. And he goes and proves it by scoring a great goal.
Yeah, and what I will do, there's two things to really note here. And as an opposing fan, I hope that people will take this in the spirit in which it's intended, which is that Morgan Gibbs-White is quite possibly one of the best passers of a ball I've ever seen at Championship level. His ability to pass the ball, to thread it through. I mean, we've had brilliant ball players like Andy Reid and Rady Majewski and so on. But Gibbs-White, he's one of those who looks like a classic, too good for the Championship, not quite good enough for the Premier League, because he was just a cut above. And for all that Sheffield United huffed and puffed for 67 minutes, he was the one who looked likely to make something for them.
Yeah.
And it was his cross that, and again, an absolute peach of a cross, and Billy Sharp leapt like a salmon. And let's be honest, remember, 35-year-old Billy Sharp, I think he is. You know, like Lewis Graben, you have to prefix his name with his age. Veteran striker. And I mean, perfect cross.
A fat lad from Sheffield, as Sean O'Driscoll used to call him.
Well, yeah, exactly. So, you know, he's everything you want in a Championship striker, isn't he? And he proved it with the goal he scored, because I say, fabulous cross, fabulous header. And of course, our hearts sunk and our heads are in our hands. But the thing that we've talked about so many times is that Forest have tenacity. So Blades were a goal up. It looked like they could potentially score more as well, didn't it?
Yes, yeah. They basically took heart from that. And this is kind of what comes back to what I was saying. You wouldn't have been able to tell that Sheffield United were the home team. The way they played, it was a smash and grab against a run of play goal, and then they started to dominate based on that. It was an away team performance against us in many ways. We were not holding on, but we were struggling for the next 20 minutes or so.
Yeah, and the way I summed it up on Twitter was to say that for the first 70 minutes, I was wondering, you know, how we weren't in the lead, and then for the next 25, I was fearing we were going to get absolutely battered.
Yep. You could see it. Them getting at least one more, maybe to even two, the way they were coming at us. And we couldn't get hold of the ball at all.
Yeah, and there were some really important moments. So there was a block tackle by Steve Cook when Gibbs-White played, I think it was Jeberson, played him through in the left channel. And, perfectly timed. The one that's kind of going to be probably in the match highlights was Forrest had a corner, Blades broke forward, and Philip Zinkernagel ran the length of the pitch. And I mean, bearing in mind he was blowing a bit going forward, but he looked like a seasoned centre half, didn't he, with that tackle?
And the thing with that not only had he run that length of the pitch, but getting that tackle an inch wrong and it was an instant red card. And he managed to pull the ball off the player's foot.
Yeah. It's perfectly timed, and perfectly executed. So you know, maybe when he's over 30, maybe he'll be one of those who reinvents himself as like an anchorman type midfielder. Yeah. Who knows? Ethan Horvath had to be called into action as well. He made two or three decent saves, reflex saves, didn't he?
Yeah. His shot stopping was pretty good. His kicking wasn't too bad. There was a few bits where his distribution wasn't great, but it was much, much better than it was against Bristol City.
Yeah, you can tell. I mean, whether we'll have time to come back to this later, I'm not sure, but you can tell that Samba's definitely the one who fancies himself as an outfield player. Let's put it that way.
Yes.
Yeah. And so Forrest knew things had to change. And the first thing they changed was taking off a defender and putting on a centre forward. So McKenna went off. Forrest went four at the back. And Sam Surridge came on. So Surridge went to centre forward and Davis pulled to the left. And that was presumably because Surridge was full of running and energy. And so he was pressing higher up against Sheffield United in the hope that it was pulling the whole team further forward.
Yeah.
That was most notable when there were a few back passes and a few kind of hopeful through balls. And Surridge was just... he was giving it everything in terms of legs with limited effectiveness, let's be honest. Not long after that, about 5 minutes later, so 85 minutes, Zinkernagel came off and Mighton came on. So that saw Brennan move into the sort of number 10 type role and Mighton played on the right-hand side. And then not long after that, we saw the final substitution, which was Colback coming off and Lolly coming on. And we were just saying, it's like, it's interesting trying to work out if there was a formation still at play.
Yeah. I mean, at the time I was like, who the hell is playing where? I have no idea is this some sort of 4-2-4 kind of thing going on? I don't really understand.
But what I will mention is that Steve Cooper has been pretty adamant in those matches where we've needed to get a late goal to get something out of the game. So he's got a game plan, even if the personnel on the field changes. He doesn't want to shift away from that game plan and those tactics, even if the formation changes.
Right at the end of the interview, he said, yeah, so we'll take what happens on the pitch and measure it against our plan. Mm. So I thought that, which was quite an interesting way of putting it.
Okay. Yeah, it's true. And you know what? There was an interesting moment just after Lolly came on. So actually in the space of about 5-6 minutes, Lolly was involved quite a lot, actually, as you would hope, as we love to see. So he tried to make a couple of forages forward. And it was actually when Forrest had a corner, the ball came to Lolly on the edge of the box. He tried to loft it back in. It was a poor pass, intercepted by Sheffield United, who put Daniel Jeberson through from the halfway line, two against one, with Lolly being the last line of defence. Yes. And you could tell he was going, right, okay, what do I do here? Do I go to the ball? Do I stay where I am? And he just about made the right decision because he went close enough to the ball that it forced Jeberson's hand and Jeberson fluffed it.
Yeah.
And that was crucial because Gibbs White threw on goal in the last minute. Yeah. You'd have put your house on him to finish the match off, wouldn't you?
Yeah, absolutely. It was as soon as you saw it was 2-1, even if it hadn't been Lolly, you'd be like, yeah, actually this is over, because all it takes is that one pass and both our defender and the keeper will be out of position. And luckily Jefferson got the pass wrong.
Yeah. And in that case, I think it's one of those things whereby actually we're pretty lucky that Sir William Sharp wasn't on the pitch, because if it had been Gibbs White and Sharp going forward there,
yeah,
I think we could have had a different result. And what that meant was, I think, to be honest, that may have psychologically handed Forrest a bit of a lifeline. They were plugging away anyway, but they got a corner more or less out of nothing.
Yeah.
And then cometh the hour, once again, cometh the man, number one, Ryan Yates. And it was a decent delivery, but Yates's movement in the box was pretty good. He lost his marker very well.
Yeah.
I have to say, bearing in mind that this was the last minute of stoppage time, it had actually already gone 95 minutes, I think, when the corner was taken. And I have to say, even as the ball flashed off Yates's head, I thought, oh, crap, it's gone wide. But suddenly it nestled in the net.
Yeah.
I don't know if you felt the same. My wife felt the same watching it with me. She's like, she was just taken aback.
I think part of the reason he got the header was, I think it was, he sort of sneaked around beside Worrell, I think. Mm-hmm. And so the marker was worrying about Worrell, and that's how he got the header. But the ball sort of went behind Worrell from where we were looking. And so that's why we couldn't see what had happened to it. So it was just a nice surprise.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. You could tell how much it meant to not only Yates, but to the rest of the team as well, to have got that goal, to have got out of jail. And as going back to where we started, it simultaneously was 2 points dropped and a point gained, wasn't it?
Yeah.
It was simultaneously delighted and disappointed. And let's move on to, because, you know, let's be honest, it was time enough to kick off and that was about it.
Yeah.
So let's move on, because Steve Cooper said he was delighted with the performance. And to be honest, I'd expect him to say that.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, for one, dominating the game and then turning it around right at the end like that, on those terms, it was a brilliant performance. I think I would take issue with a few bits and pieces in the game. I thought, as I think I've mentioned before, we weren't ruthless enough when we had the ball and when we were getting our shots in. I was looking at the stats and there weren't actually that many shots on target. There were quite a few shots, but they were wide or whatever. I think it's 4 on target.
Yeah, 4 on target and 4 off target. 13 in total. So I don't know what happened to the other shots, the other 5 shots that we took.
But given the impression, if you think back on the game, you say, right, we dominated for 70 minutes and we had loads and loads of chances, but actually it was 4 shots on target. I'd be interested to see what the XG says at the end of it as well. And then the other thing, I thought, especially for in the bit when we were dominating, I didn't think we really strung any passes together. So we were dominating without controlling the game, as it were. It was more Sheffield United couldn't keep hold of the ball, so we would then win it back high up the pitch and then make something off it, rather than, and again, I think in many ways, this is probably Garner's least successful match for a good few months. And I think that's probably related. We didn't hold the ball very well. We didn't use the ball very well. So I think there was a bit of work to be done on that side of things.
I'd say that Jimmy Garner's main contributions were obviously taking the set pieces. And also when Forrest were chasing the game and he was doing that thing where he was coming deep to receive the ball off the centre halves in the left channels. Yeah. And that's when he showed up. But yeah, in terms of his being the person to progress the ball through the team and spraying the passes out wide, he was quieter today. Zinchenko, as we've already discussed, he can be quite explosive in that kind of number 10 position, and he tried to be, but he just wasn't getting anywhere today. It was a frustrating one for him, I think. And I also thought that actually we didn't really see Yates for a lot of the match until we were chasing it, to be perfectly honest. So midfield was Yeah, I can see where you're saying, because yes, we dominated the match, but you'd expect domination to stem from the midfield area.
And
it did. And we did. I think the balance of the team had shifted with Max Lowe being out and Colback being shunted out to the left.
Yeah, definitely. And I think so. Yeah, from that point of view, yeah, you can say it with Steve Cooper's, we'll say it's a brilliant performance. But I think I've always said games are won and lost in midfield. And as you say, we didn't show in midfield quite as much. So it wasn't as great a performance as it first appears, I think.
Okay, well, I will just point out to the listener that other opinions are also available. And what I would also say is that it was really noticeable how much I could see Sheffield United fans on social media saying Forest were by far the best team that we've played this season at Bramall Lane, and Keenan Davis was the most complete performance we've seen. And of course, the trouble there is, yes, it was a complete performance in terms of him being a bustling number nine. Wasn't in the box that much, and the one time he was that one where his shirt was pulled. So you can make of that what you will.
But having said all that, I mean, if we were on the eighth game of the season, would you have taken a point away at Sheffield United and almost in the playoffs? Absolutely. So
yeah,
you can't really complain that much. It shows how much further. If I'm saying we had a bad performance because Jimmy Garner didn't control the entire match for 90 minutes, that shows how far we've come.
Yeah, that's a fair point. Just a very quick one about Monday's match against Huddersfield. Would you expect to see, broadly speaking, the same lineup? And what do you think he will do in between the sticks?
I suspect it will be a very, very similar lineup, because it's almost like it's one in, one out kind of thing. I think it will be Horvath on Monday and Samba back for the league.
Okay, and Maxi coming back in at left back. So which of the midfielders do you think will get dropped?
Probably it looks like it's going to be, well, I'd probably put it down to fitness or whatever. But Yates is the obvious one that he's been dropping for that kind of thing. So that's probably the likely.
Okay. Well, thank you to you, listener, for joining us tonight. And it was a really great advert for the Championship. I'm sure we'll all agree. And in the end, yes, two points dropped, but a point gained away at Bramall Lane. So still all to play for. And we'll be back after Monday's match with a match report in your feeds coming up soon.
Sports Social Podcast Network.